It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll be learning about life as a prison chaplain.
First, a report came out today warning that Americans without health insurance will be paying higher tax penalties next year.
The enrollment period for federal health care plans for 2016 opens up on November 1st. So if you're someone who's decided to go without insurance so far, the jump in fees might make you change your mind.
Under the Affordable Care Act, a person who goes all 12 months of 2016 could end up paying nearly $700 in tax penalties. It's more than double the penalty for people who decided not to get health insurance over the last year. Joining us now is Tom Oliver, professor of population health at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
So as we said a moment ago, Americans without health insurance could pay almost $700 in penalties. Why are we seeing that penalty go up?
Well, at the start of the Affordable Care Act implementation, there was just a small nudge to push people to become aware of what was available under the law, and just to give them a very small penalty if they managed to not sign up, but they had enough income to qualify for insurance. The increase now is just strengthening the reminder. It's really still a small nudge because it's only at the most 2% of your income. So if you're to go up to about $23,000 in income, which is about the target that individuals would be aiming at here, you would basically be getting about $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 worth of insurance coverage with some subsidies. And so you're really still talking about at $695 being the most that you could be charged at that level, a really modest amount. But it's still a significant psychological nudge to get people to go into the marketplace if they have no other insurance options. The other thing that we need to be aware of is that about a quarter of all the people who are still uninsured, about 33 million Americans, are actually eligible for coverage through Medicaid expansions in most of the states or under current Medicaid coverage in the other states. And then the other quarter are eligible for the marketplace, and that's where the $695 nudge is being aimed at.
And in the past, it seems like a lot of the publicity around healthcare sign-up has been the benefits of getting covered. Some people are saying, okay, if this is going up, we need to publicize this, publicize the penalty side if it's going to work as an incentive. Do you see an effort to do that?
I think there's going to be a lot more awareness. A lot of folks have kind of coasted along, but I'm sure they noticed even the $300 penalty that was applied in the past year if they did not have coverage and did not otherwise have a financial hardship. The other thing, you know, we want to pay attention to, there's 12 million people in America who are uninsured but who were able to plead financial hardship. They either don't have enough income to buy affordable coverage under the Affordable Care Act, or they had special circumstances. So that's a very, very large number compared with the number who are choosing voluntarily to go without insurance coverage. We discovered way back when Massachusetts enacted its mandate for health insurance coverage back in 2006, so we've had over a decade of experience, that it takes very little money on the line to get people to want to get health insurance coverage. And the reason they don't get it is not because they don't want to or because they're worried about these small financial penalties. It's because they really don't have the extra discretionary cash because they're working very few hours or it's uneven, and they just really feel that it's displacing food or housing or other important needs in their lives.
Big picture, since this part of the Affordable Care Act, because it's one of many parts of that law, but since this part came into effect, what have been the trends? Are we seeing a lot fewer uninsured people in the United States?
It's a remarkable trend. We peaked at close to 50 million uninsured Americans back in the middle of the Great Recession in 2008, 2009, 2010, around the period leading up to the Affordable Care Act. Since then, we've seen a dramatic decline, and just this past year, we saw 9 million people fewer uninsured in this country. So we've gone from about 16, well, at the peak of the Great Recession, about 18% of all Americans who were not eligible for Medicare were uninsured. Now we're down close to 10%, which is a remarkable advance. And just, as I said, just this past year, we've seen growth both in Medicaid enrollment in the states that had expansions, quite dramatic enrollment of several million people, and we've seen almost 10 million people sign up for the federal or the state marketplace plans, these so-called health insurance exchanges.
Talking to Tom Oliver from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health about the Affordable Care Act. Penalties going up for categories of people who are uninsured next year and an enrollment period coming up starting in November. Tom, this is all these penalties surround the idea of the individual mandate, the requirement that people sign up for health insurance or face a penalty. You've talked about this when this was a hot issue a lot on these airwaves, but remind us, why was the individual mandate seen as a key part of the Affordable Care Act?
Oh, it's a great question, Rob. It's basically part of a three-legged stool, and you need all three legs for the entire system to work well. The first leg is that health insurance companies who previously had denied coverage for people with pre-existing conditions or imposed lifetime limits for people with very expensive treatment plans were now going to be forced to take all comers and disregard pre-existing conditions and other high-cost kinds of individuals and families. But in order to do that, they need a large risk pool. They need people who are not likely to use very many healthcare services, along with those that they are quite sure are going to be using a lot of care. So that's the requirement or the mandate that individuals not wait until they get sick to join the insurance pool. So that's why you need to have the mandate. But then the third leg of the stool is that a lot of people can't afford, just out of their own pockets, health insurance premiums. A family coverage averages about $14,000 or $15,000 a year right now. We spend in this country about $8,000 per person on average. So those are huge amounts of money for most people who are living at one or two or three times the poverty rate up to, you know, the medium income in this country for households is just a little over $50,000. So, you know, talking about $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000, or $7,000 is really quite unaffordable, and that's why there are tax credits or subsidies to help people with more modest incomes purchase insurance coverage. But if you don't have all three of those working in order to actually offer affordable coverage, you can't really then require people to buy it. And so it's the people in the gap between, you know, something that looks to be affordable to a higher income individual but is not for a very modest working low-wage working families that we're really focusing in on. And that's where there's still some people who are not able to purchase even with the available subsidies.
One critique I've seen, Tom, and this I think I've seen from people across the political spectrum when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, is that maybe there should have been a fourth leg dealing with the increasing costs of medical care and prescription drugs in this country, no matter who's paying for it. Has the Affordable Care Act done anything along those lines?
There are a number of areas in which there is cost containment underway under the Affordable Care Act, and there are reviews of health insurance premium increases. The federal government is able to now look at health insurers and what they're proposing from last year to the next and look at things that are unreasonable and deny or negotiate lower increases. There are also denials of payment to hospitals for unnecessary readmission. So if somebody goes into the hospital and their problem isn't taken care of, or a some kind of a infection occurs and they get sent back home and then have to come right back in, the hospital doesn't get paid the second time. There are these accountable care organizations that are being set up for Medicare beneficiaries that are intended to limit the overall spending and encourage health care providers to think about taking care of patients in a preventive way in order to save money and save some of their pay. payments that they would otherwise not get on a fee-for-service basis. So there's a number of things going on, and I think the other remarkable story that over the last 4 or 5 years we've had the slowest growth in healthcare spending as a country that we've had pretty much since those numbers have been calculated. And so we've ended up with, you know, by and large, a really good story about what the United States is doing relative to, we've always heard about how other countries have a way of taking care and providing universal care or coverage for pretty much their whole population. And now the United States is getting a lot closer to that, although there's still a lot of folks, recent immigrants and folks who are here illegally, don't have entitlement to any kind of health insurance, obviously.
We'll leave it there for now. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
That's Tom Oliver, UW-Madison public health expert, talking about the higher tax penalties that uninsured Americans will face next year. It's time for Wisconsin Life. This month, a look at faith here in the state. At Oak Hill Correctional Institution south of Madison, Reverend Emmanuel Okoye offers religious services to nearly 700 inmates. A native of Nigeria, he's served as chaplain there for the past decade.
In the northeast corner of Oak Hill's 100-acre grounds is a tiny A-frame chapel. There, 5 days a week, you'll find Reverend Emmanuel Okoye working from a corner office.
Yeah, I'm from Nigeria, West Africa. When I was growing up, I do have an inclination in my heart that there's something special about my life.
The Lord is good. All the time. The Lord is time.
The Lord is good.
Amen. Okoye grew up in a small village but spent his 20s as a businessman in Lagos, Africa's largest city. But he said he felt lost. He turned to his religious roots and was ordained as a Pentecostal minister in his early 30s. In the late 90s, the church called him to move his family to Milwaukee to serve as a youth pastor. His decision to stay in Wisconsin was based, in part, on the state's motto.
I kind of look at the Wisconsin coat of arms. There's a sign on top of it. It says, "Forward." After I prayed, I looked at it, I decided that I'll stay in this state and move forward with this state.
In 2004, Okoye took over as Oak Hill's chaplain. I asked if he was nervous his first day.
Yes, I was nervous because the way we look at prisons from outside, you know, there are criminals over there, you know, they are aggressive, they're bad people. It's not necessarily that way.
Amen. 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 Yes, Lord. Yes. That our brother will die again and rise again. Yes. In the name of Jesus.
Yes.
Amen.
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 Okay, come on in, brother.
At Oak Hill, he leads worship services, gives sermons, conducts baptisms. He also helps organize services for the many faith groups inside Oak Hill. Catholics, pagans, Protestants, Jews, Native Americans, and Muslims.
Our goal is just one, to help let the inmates understand what has transpired in their life, what brought them here, and how they can move forward and don't have to come back to prison. So we want to see people changed and move on with their lives.
He also meets one-on-one with inmates, a role that brings him face-to-face with a lot of guilt, grief, and despair.
Men do cry. Sometimes I have to wait. Even the Kleenex, maybe somebody's wife is having a baby, or the mom is in the hospital, or the dad, or somebody passed. Most of the time, it's the chaplain that breaks the news to them.
But the job has joyful moments. At a Christmas service last winter, I watched him clap hands and bump fists with inmates as they sang carols.
Hallelujah.
Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Let earth receive her peace.
I'm not a medical doctor or a cardiologist, but I say we work on people's heart. See, that's what we do. I feel fulfilled being part of somebody's journey. And it's a joyful thing to see them go home where there's no fence. That's a joyful thing.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org.
We just heard about how Reverend Emmanuel Okoye tends to the spiritual needs of inmates who are currently serving their sentences. There are also pressing issues for those who are preparing to leave prison and to re-enter their communities. Joining us now is Jackie Austin. She's a program coordinator for Madison Area Urban Ministry and is involved in helping inmates transition back to life outside. Jackie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, for the Madison Area Urban Ministry, it's a priority to work with inmates and recently released prisoners. Why is that, as a network of faith, is that so important?
It's that most faith traditions share some belief in restorative justice, that when a person's debt to society is essentially paid, in our case through incarceration, at that point, according to statute, but also according to the beliefs of many faiths, the person is ready to re-enter society, and at that point to do what they can from now forward to restore what they can of their own life and that of the community.
And what are some of the biggest fears and concerns that these inmates have as they contemplate returning home?
Well, we do a workshop in the prison with returning prisoners in which they rehearse their own reentry plan. And quite frankly, it's very daunting. I would be somewhat frightened myself, even asking questions of people, where are you going to sleep your first night out of prison? Do you have family who will support you? Perhaps people have a debt, such as they owe traffic fines or fines on a driver's license, or they may owe child support. Do they have a job lined up? Even asking those questions makes people very apprehensive.
Now, you said you rehearse with them. What will happen when they get out of prison? What kind of rehearsal do you do, and how does that go over?
It goes over very well. What it is for us is a two-part workshop. We actually have a version that we do in the community and a different version we do in prisons. It takes place in two separate sessions. The first session is one where we talk about basic human needs and reentry needs, that you will need a place to live, you will need a source of income, you will need transportation, and so forth, and that you will have to follow whatever rules of community supervision you may have, etc. But we give the prisoners, it's entirely voluntary, and we give them a questionnaire, which they complete. We then take that with us, and based on that, we come back usually 2 weeks later and have a role play in a workshop where we are all together in a room, and we literally take the community into the prison. We take people with us who represent educational institutions, the job center, the parole office, perhaps a landlord, etc. And each person who has filled out the questionnaire is given a customized task list to visit various information or community tables that deal with the kinds of things they will need to do when they get out. So they get to sort of walk in their own shoes in a mock scenario in which we pretend they just got out of prison that morning, and they have a customized task list. Go renew your driver's license. Go cash your check, your release check. Arrange to make a child support payment, rent an apartment, and so on. And it actually gives people some confidence in their own plan and then shows them areas where they might still have to work. And in the process of doing this, we take real information, resource information, into the prison with us so that people will have information about the community services that will support them at the time they are released to the community.
And when they do make that transition, let's say they've gone through this program with you, they know what to expect, they have this checklist. Are you there for them afterwards as they encounter hurdles? I'm sure they do. Do they have that support once they are released to the outside world?
In the case of our agency, absolutely yes. We have a program called The Journey Home. We are based in Dane County, so we do focus on people coming to Dane County. But through our Journey Home program, we have monthly information fairs, we have staff on site who are community resource specialists, and we link people returning to the community to the existing services in the community. We also have volunteers who serve on circles of support, and these circles are based with four or five trained volunteers who meet once a week with a newly released person and work through very simple goal-oriented steps to help them stay focused on the things they need to accomplish. Similar programs do exist in other counties, and when we are working with people from different counties, we generally try to refer them to whatever services exist in the county to which they will return.
Now, are your services and the support that you offer, is that in any way linked to the prisoner's religious beliefs, or is this something that everyone partakes of regardless?
In our case, we are an interfaith ministry, and we welcome everyone regardless of their faith belief, or including people who do not have a particular faith home. So there is no proselytizing involved. However, we do discover, as I say, that people across many, many beliefs share the belief that people do deserve a second chance, or perhaps a third, fourth, and fifth chance, in order to really reestablish themselves. There are many barriers to return, and so we are not favoring a specific religion, and we welcome people of any faith or no faith to come to our door.
Jackie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Jackie Austin. She's the program coordinator for Madison Area Urban Ministry.
A magazine editor from Eau Claire recently made the argument that Wisconsin's communities need more free, interesting events to give people something to do.
These hangables, as he calls them, could include free outdoor movie showings, farmers markets, or really any community event that encourages socializing and is broad enough that just about anybody could enjoy it.
We're joined now by Nick Meyer, editor, publisher, and owner of Volume 1 magazine and The Local Store in Eau Claire. He wrote the piece, "Are Hangables a Key to Community Success?" Nick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Happy to have the conversation.
Well, we better start by figuring out what you mean by the word hangable. What is that?
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of us go to events. We go to concerts. We go to film screenings, theater events, sporting events. All these things have frequently a cost, not always, but sometimes they also have a specific start time. You have to be there at a certain time. You have to leave at a certain time. And a lot of times they're kind of a niched out interest. You know, if you're into theater, that's great. If you're into sports, that's great. A lot of times those crowds don't always mix, but a hangable is something that is broad enough that some part of it speaks to somebody else in a different way, and another part might speak to someone else in a different way. And it's free, and you can kind of come and go whenever you want, and it's not at a bar, it's not at a theater, but it works for families, it works for date nights, it works for any number of things.
Well, tell us some examples from your community, Eau Claire, that fit that model.
Sure. Well, here we have a lot of the things that you have in a lot of communities. There's a very successful farmers market here that's more of a morning event, but that tends to work for a lot of different people as an interesting thing to do. We'll have several thousand people here downtown Eau Claire on a Saturday morning throughout the summer and into the fall. We have a Volume 1, actually. We produce a concert series on Thursday nights that's free for the community that'll get a couple thousand people on the banks of the river here. And we have a Banbury art crawl at a huge old facility here that's been turned into a bunch of artists' lofts, but that's only once a year that happens, and that's kind of most of the list. Everything else tends to be, very niche activities, whether you're interested in live music or not. But so when this hit me, it was sort of at our store here, at the local store in Eau Claire, we started producing an event called the Night Market, where it has a little bit of live music, it has a food truck, it has tastings, there's sales and different makers from throughout the community that all come, and it's all free, and it lasts for several hours, so you can come and go whenever you want. And it just sort of struck me that we had so much success with the first couple of those that it's just clear that there was a thirst for more of that kind of broad, open-ended event.
And are you looking particularly at night and evening? Because I think of a lot of towns, you know, there's stuff, obviously people are working during the day, they're going out for dinner at dinner time, but then it's a ghost town except for maybe a bar here or there. Is that what you're trying to fill in?
Well, right. I mean, if you don't have a set plan or you don't have tickets to a show already or some specific, you know, thing that you're going to, this is the kind of thing that you can just casually roll into. And, you know, there's such a scene outside and around our building with this because it's, you know, with the night market, there come all these lights and these things that we have outdoors, and that if you're just driving by, it's an easy thing to just drop into and see. And there's a great energy and, you know, dozens and dozens of people in there that are just kind of taking it all in.
Now, for a lot of people in Wisconsin, in the evening, you know, a lot of the social life can not revolve around, but at least include, you know, a bar or having
right.
drinks. Is this something about an alternative aspect to you of offering something that is sort of more family friendly?
Well, that's where I think it's about, you know, when you talk about nightlife in a community, downtowns are, you know, need to be centers of nightlife a lot of times, and nightlife tends to mean a bar. Again, it can mean a theater event or something, but that speaks to a certain community and a certain crowd and an important one, but there's another whole set of people that may not be interested in spending any time in a bar or, for that matter, in a theater, and just need more things to do. And so, yeah, an evening-based activity that's free and that can check off all these different boxes, we're finding that, at least in this community, there's a huge thirst for it.
We're talking to Nick Meyer from Volume 1 Magazine in Eau Claire. He's making the case that his community, other communities, need more what he's calling hangables. Places, spaces, events, they're free where people come, show up, no set start time. There might be stuff to buy, stuff to eat, stuff to do. You can join in. Do you have something like this or do you want something like this in your own community? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Nick, when we think of hanging out these days, a lot of people are hanging out at home on the internet, interacting with others that way. Why do we need this in-person thing in our communities?
No, that's a great question. I mean, and I think all nightlife and all entertainment-based activities in all of our communities are struggling with that, you know, the Netflix and chill movement where people just spend time at home, you know, in front of the TV or in front of the computer, and that's great a lot of the time, and that's important, you know, with your family and your friends. But, you know, our communities are built around social interaction. They're built around the third places. You have your home, you have your work, and you have your third places, which are coffee shops and yes, bars and parks and plazas and things. And that's a very important part of community life. And if we're going to bring people back out of their homes and off of those TV screens and computer screens, we need to engage them. And we can't just scold them or expect them to do it. There has to be a very active approach to programming, and that can come from a city, from a governmental body. It can come from private businesses, like what we're doing here. But somebody has to take the lead, or multiple people have to take the lead, to kind of try to keep people engaged with not only their downtowns, but their communities overall.
And so, Nick, what do you think the pluses are for communities with more of these hangable events? What does the community itself get out of it?
Well, I think when you get, in our case, we're going through a very significant downtown revitalization right now. There are major construction projects happening here. There are hotels opening. There are new apartment buildings going up and commercial spaces and old buildings being rehabbed and brand new ones going up. And to really expose everybody to what's happening in our downtowns, and this revitalization is happening around the state in lots of communities our size and bigger and smaller, but to really get, you need that broad cross-section to get exposed to these things, to come down and have some sort of positive experience, so they then become hungry for that next positive experience. And those become opportunities to support the businesses and the ideas and the arts groups and the nonprofits that produce all of this stuff. And pretty soon you develop a, you know, kind of this mind hive or this cycle of interest and support from a much broader segment of the community.
Let's bring in a caller. We've got Matt on the line with us at 800-642-1234. Matt's calling from Madison. Matt, hi.
Hi there.
What do you think, Matt?
So I'm a recent transplant from the Bay Area. And in the San Francisco Bay Area, they had a website called funcheap.com that listed all sort of the fun, free events all throughout the Bay Area. And it was a great resource for similar events that you're talking about.
Matt, and would you go on that and go find a free thing and just show up and hang out?
All the time. It was great, you know, instead of going to bars or instead of, you know, spending $30 on a ticket to go see a concert, it was a great event. It was a lot of cultural events and were put on by different, you know, restaurants or stores to sort of promote themselves, but always, you know, very inexpensive or free.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Nick?
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, that's the core of what we do. I mean, at Volume 1, yes, we have a store here, but, you know, at volume1.org, we serve that same thing in our community. And all of these communities in Wisconsin and abroad have a media group or something who are promoting that sort of information and providing those listings of free activities. And in the case of, he mentioned the businesses, you know, promoting themselves. And honestly, with our store, that's why we started this in part was, well, let's get some people in here in October, which tends to be a, you know, a slower retail month. And so we took these Friday nights And but what's really cool about it is that people can come and it's free. And, you know, obviously we would love for them to shop and spend money here, but there's no pressure for anyone to do that. When you go to a bar with, you know, with friends or someone, you kind of feel like maybe you have to buy a drink. If you go to a restaurant, you feel like, well, I should really, you know, I should buy something. In a retail environment, there's really no pressure to do that. You can just shop for fun and check it out. But if you bring a critical mass of people and you get the energy kind of stirred up and exciting, that's how, you know, a private business or a, you know, a community body can monetize this and fund producing events like this, is by creating an environment where you don't have to spend money, but there's a bunch of options to do it if you would like to.
Now, we saw a picture online of one of the events that you're writing about, and it's outside. There are people strolling around. So, of course, it's warm enough. What do you do in the winter when no one wants to hang out outside?
But yeah, this event, the night market, is kind of an indoor-outdoor thing. There's kind of both options. So you can kind of hedge your bets on those October nights that can be gorgeous or too cold, and there's different components. We also produce an event here in January and February, along with the Parks and Recreation Department of Eau Claire, called Winter After Hours, which is very much just 100% outdoors. It's a skating event. You can try snowshoeing for the first time. We have our Eau Claire's like world record winning snow carvers that do carvings each week, and that's another event that's free. You can just be there, or you can spend some money on some food or some beverage while you're there. So we try to just embrace the cold as much as possible and get people. This is part of who we are. We live in Wisconsin. We can't hide all winter, you know, risking our seasonal affective disorder kicking in. You got to get outside. You got to embrace it. We're from Wisconsin. We live here. Let's love it, at least as much as you can wince through that, I guess.
We're talking to Nick Meyer right now. He's making the case for more free and fun open events for everyone in Wisconsin communities. He's got a name for them. He calls them hangables.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Does your community put on something like this, something like these hangables, like a night farmers market or other free event? Do you have an idea that you think would be good for your community? What would you like to see your city, your town do? Maybe help brainstorm what would work in an event like this. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking right now about the importance of free, fun events in Wisconsin communities, and we want to hear from you.
Do you have a farmers market or free weekly concerts you like to go to in your community? Do you have ideas for what our guest calls hangables in your community? Free events, good for people with different interests, no set start times, a place you can come and be and meet people in your community. What do you want to see in your town? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take a caller now. We have Kiera with us from Eau Claire as we continue our conversation with Nick Meyer from Volume 1. Kiera, hi.
Hi.
What is your comment here today?
Well, first, I was just going to say, being from Eau Claire, I wanted to say thanks to Volume 1 and all the great things that they've done, helped our community do in recent years. They've just done a lot of awesome stuff here.
Thank you very much.
And I was going to say, I'm a single mom with a young toddler, and it's always a struggle finding things you can do with kids and adults. And I think you guys have helped with that a lot, but one thing that I saw, I was traveling to North Carolina last summer, and I stopped at a restaurant that had an indoor and outdoor seating area with both areas, had areas for, like, families or adults to sit at tables, and then along the wall, like, toys and an indoor sandbox and all these things, so you could, like, sit and have a drink and hang out with your friends or have dinner while your kids, everyone's kids play together.
Great, Kiera, thank you for that. And what about this move to make things more friendly for families with places for the kids to be entertained where the adults can relax a little?
Yeah, that's what we've seen. I mean, with our experiment here with this night market thing so far, I mean, it's just the diversity of who this, you know, of the crowd that has been interested in this is fantastic. I mean, you'll see college kids come in, you'll see, you know, young professionals on a date come in, and you'll definitely see, you know, the families coming as well. And I think that's one of the keys to success of things like our farmers market here or the concert series we produce in the summer, is that it just feels cool to anybody. You don't have to be, you know, have such a specific interest in a specific area. It's just a great social event for the whole community, and it feels good no matter who you're there with or what age, and no one feels like they're not supposed to be there, that this is too cool for me and my kids, or that this is lame because all these families are here if you're young. So, I mean, it's just you have to find something that works for everybody and has a little bit of offering that keeps everybody into it. And one of those things, I mean, it can't be one thing either. When you get to a hangable, you have to have a good half a dozen at least, if not 10 plus different components that make this place something. It's like the power of 10 is a theory in community building and development, that to have any kind of thriving community, you have to have 10 different areas in that community that have stuff happening. And within each one of those 10 areas, like a downtown, you have to have 10 different sort of districts within that. And then when you get into that, you get just down into 10, 10, 10. When you get into that one business or that one park, there have to be 10 different things to do there in order to reach that critical mass. And that's when you're onto something, and that's when you start to see the success and things click and feel right.
Kiara, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Dimitri on the line in Milwaukee. Dimitri, hi.
Hi there. I'm in Milwaukee, and so lucky enough where there's quite a few of these that are all around the city. And I guess I just had two comments, or maybe a comment and a question. One of the last callers that said that in the Bay Area they had some sort of special source that lists these. I think that's a fantastic idea, and unfortunately we don't have something like that here. So if you're moving and you're new to the city, you might not know about the plethora of events that are out there. So that might be great. And then another, this is more of a question, is if I were a business owner, I would be listening and going, you know, that sounds great, but I wonder how much work is involved in getting all sorts of government permits and whatever I need in order to make sure that this happens, because I bet that that's probably a stumbling block in terms of getting events off the ground.
Dimitri, thanks for that call. Let's take that last point. How much, if it's just, say, a business owner trying to take the lead on this, how challenging is this?
Well, that's a great point and a great idea. A lot of times it's not as challenging as people think it is, especially if it's a business owner and you have your own private property. 9 times out of 10, you can do anything you want for the most part. Depending on your municipality, yeah, there's going to be different levels of permits for different things. And I'll go ahead on public, on the, you know, statewide radio here and say, we are an organization that seeks forgiveness instead of permission on these things. And that's my number one piece of advice. If you want to make something like this happen, just do it first. Make it happen. And then deal with, you know, with some of the things later on. I mean, everybody has to have their own level of comfort with that. But we've had a lot of success with our community and have a great relationship with our city and Parks and Rec and everybody else here. And we've worked with everybody on something or another over the last 12-plus years. But just make it happen and then figure it out. If it's a cool thing that the community wants and it becomes clear to the powers that be that hold the power over permits and things that this should happen, they're going to work with you to make it happen. Whereas if you ask too many questions up front, you might get some no's. Pretty soon the wind is out of your sails and nothing happens. So just move forward, make it work.
Okay, we heard it from you. Yes. The city call up and complain. So, Nick, you know, is there something special about Eau Claire that makes this kind of thing easier, that there's maybe more going on there? You've got the big arts scene, you've got restaurants, or do you think all cities have this stuff if they just look deep enough?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, they all have it. I mean, everybody has their own assets to work with and their own pluses and minuses. Eau Claire happens to be kind of on fire right now with a population who is just kind of awakening to itself over these last handful of years and what's really possible here. And you're hearing a lot more yeses to things these days than you're hearing no's, that you can't do that here, or we've never done it that way before. Those things are kind of evaporating in Eau Claire, and I'm not sure if that's the case elsewhere. But so there's really a culture of let's make some awesome stuff happen right now. And so we're taking advantage of that as much as we can. There are lots of other groups in this community that are stepping up to do the same thing. And success breeds success. You know, once you see one thing like this, you know, whether it's a night market or a concert or a farmer's market, it just emboldens others to try the same thing. And pretty soon you've got, you know, a pretty hot cultural scene on your hands, you know, at whatever scale, whether it's Milwaukee size scale or Eau Claire size scale or even smaller than that. Any advancement is good no matter, you know, what size community you're dealing with.
Talking to Nick Meyer from Volume 1 Magazine in Eau Claire about creating a fun community events. Free is the key, he says, to bring people together, bring people into downtown areas. We go back to our callers with Deborah in Milwaukee. Deborah, hi.
Hi. This may seem very simple, and it is. That's why I think it's doable. But, you know, if you want people to form a community, you have to communicate. And I think, you know, in Brown Deer, the village of Brown Deer, and in Milwaukee, there's no benches to sit on and where people talk. I talk to people all the time. We have conversations standing up. And, I mean, I just think, like in my hometown, I came back from a week ago, Marquette, Michigan. There's picnic tables everywhere, benches to sit on, bike racks everywhere. I mean, it was just amazing. And I just think people should... You shouldn't have to go to a park to sit down on a bench and talk to somebody.
Deborah, thanks a lot for that call. So getting the infrastructure in place on a daily basis, she's saying, but that might make it easier to set up a space for the hangables you're talking about, Nick.
Right. I mean, and, you know, every community has some group of people that are in charge of these sorts of things. And sometimes it might sound, you know, don't always assume that there's no budget for these things. There are business improvement districts and things who might be even sitting on some money and they don't have ideas for necessarily what to do with it. And any active citizen with an idea can come before those groups or join those groups even better and start directing how some of these funds should be used or how we can raise funds for it or even having an event like this to raise money to do more things like this. So, you know, it's not hard to step up and get involved. And sometimes the smaller the community, the easier it is to make things happen. So, get out there and talk to them and get your benches, get whatever it is that you have that your community needs.
So you've got your night farmers market, you've got your art crawl. What other ideas are in the pike for Eau Claire and sort of this hangable
sure.
aspect of things?
Well, I mean, a major thing that a topic here has been this Confluence Arts Center, which is a massive $75 million development right at the core of downtown Eau Claire where our two rivers come together. And right now at my office window, I can see, you know, there's the apartment building and commercial mixed-use building with restaurants and things on the river that is going up right now. They're just finishing up fundraising for the art center. And between those two buildings is a public plaza that's going to be going in. Eau Claire is award-winning on many lists for its park system, meaning more grass and trees and trails and amazing bike trails throughout the whole city. But what we don't have is a really good public plaza, more of that urban environment. It's basically a park, but more of like an urban park that's paved in some way. And that's what we're going to get now. And so they're finalizing what the offerings in that sort of space are going to be. But that's the perfect sort of space for a hangable. A park might be a little bit sprawling sometimes, but a really good plaza in a dense urban area can really be activated day or night as a truly perfect hangable type of space if the right programming happens in it. And sometimes that programming can happen organically by the community. Sometimes it can be more planned by a nonprofit or a business or the government itself. But somewhere or another, you have to activate those spaces and make them vital.
And Nick, very briefly, it sounds like any of this would take a spark plug, somebody to take the lead. Very brief pep talk for somebody who might take that step.
It's got to be you. It's not going to be somebody else. You have to, if you need something, if you see something needs to be done, don't start asking who should do this because you're the person who's supposed to do it. So make the phone calls, get to the meetings, and take action, and pretty soon you're going to find yourself in a leading role.
Nick, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Nick Meyer, editor of Volume 1 Magazine in Eau Claire, discussing the importance of free, fun events and bringing communities together.